Chapter 131. The midshipman makes a discovery. It was long before Florence awoke. The day was in its prime, the day was in its wane, and still, uneasy in mind and body, she slept on, unconscious of her strange bed, of the noise and turmoil in the street, and of the light that shone outside the shaded window. Perfect unconsciousness of what had happened in the home that existed no more, even the deep slumber of exhaustion could not produce. Some undefined and mournful recollection of it, dozing uneasily but never sleeping, pervaded all her rest. A dull sorrow, like a half-lulled sense of pain, was always present to her, and her pale cheek was oftener wet with tears than the honest captain, softly putting in his head from time to time at the half-closed door, could have desired to see it. The sun was getting low in the west, and, glancing out of a red mist, pierced with its rays opposite loopholes and pieces of fretwork in the spires of city churches, as if with golden arrows, that struck through and through them, and far away athwart the river and its flat banks, it was gleaming like a path of fire, and out at sea it was irradiating sails of ships, and, looked towards, from quiet churchyards, upon hilltops in the country, it was steeping distant prospects in a flush and glow that seemed to mingle earth and sky together in one glorious suffusion when Florence, opening her heavy eyes, lay at first, looking without interest or recognition at the unfamiliar walls around her, and listening in the same regardless manner to the noises in the street. But presently she started up upon her couch, gazed round with a surprised and vacant look, and recollected all. "My pretty," apostrophe said the captain, knocking at the door, "what cheer?" "Apostrophe, dear friend, apostrophe," cried Florence, hurrying to him, "is it you?" Apostrophe, the captain felt so much pride in the name, and was so pleased by the gleam of pleasure in her face when she saw him, that he kissed his hook, by way of reply, in speechless gratification. "What cheer, bright diamond?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the captain. "I have surely slept very long," apostrophe, returned Florence. "When did I come here?" "Yesterday?" Apostrophe, "this here blessed day, my lady lass," apostrophe, replied the captain. "Has there been no night? Is it still day?" apostrophe, asked Florence. "Getting on for evening now, my pretty," apostrophe, said the captain, drawing back the curtain of the window. "See," apostrophe, Florence, with her hand upon the captain's arm, so sorrowful and timid, and the captain with his rough face and burly figure, so quietly protective of her, stood in the rosy light of the bright evening sky, without saying a word. However strange the form of speech into which he might have fashioned the feeling, if he had had to give it utterance, the captain felt, as sensibly as the most eloquent of men could have done, that there was something in the tranquil time, and in its softened beauty, that would make the wounded heart of Florence overflow, and that it was better that such tears should have their way. So not a word spake Captain Cuttle. But when he felt his arm clasped closer, and when he felt the lonely head come nearer to it, and lay itself against his homely coarse blue sleeve, he pressed it gently with his rugged hand, and understood it, and was understood. "Better now, my pretty," apostrophe, apostrophe, said the captain. "Cheerily, cheerily, I'll go down below, and get some dinner ready. Will you come down of your own self, arterwards, pretty, or shall letter Cuddle come and fetch you?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, as Florence assured him that she was quite able to walk downstairs, the captain, though evidently doubtful of his own hospitality in permitting it, left her to do so, and immediately set about roasting a fowl at the fire in the little parlor. To achieve his cookery with the greater skill, he pulled off his coat, tucked up his wristbands, and put on his glazed hat, without which assistant he never applied himself to any nice or difficult undertaking. After cooling her aching head and burning face in the fresh water which the captain's care had provided for her while she slept, Florence went to the little mirror to bind up her disordered hair. Then she knew in a moment, for she shunned it instantly, that on her breast there was the darkening mark of an angry hand. Her tears burst forth afresh at the sight. She was ashamed and afraid of it, but it moved her to no anger against him. Homeless and fatherless, she forgave him everything, hardly thought that she had need to forgive him, or that she did. But she fled from the idea of him as she had fled from the reality, and he was utterly gone and lost. There was no such being in the world. What to do, or where to live, Florence, poor, inexperienced girl, could not yet consider. She had indistinct dreams of finding, a long way off, some little sisters to instruct, who would be gentle with her, and to whom, under some feigned name, she might attach herself, and who would grow up in their happy home, and marry, and be good to their old governess, and perhaps entrust her, in time, with the education of their own daughters. And she thought how strange and sorrowful it would be, thus to become a gray-haired woman, carrying her secret to the grave, when Florence Dombey was forgotten. But it was all dim and clouded to her now. She only knew that she had no father upon earth, and she said so, many times, with her suppliant head hidden from all, but her father who was in heaven. Her little stock of money amounted to but a few guineas. With a part of this, it would be necessary to buy some clothes, for she had none but those she wore. She was too desolate to think how soon her money would be gone, too much a child in worldly matters, to be greatly troubled on that score yet, even if her other trouble had been less. She tried to calm her thoughts, and stay her tears, to quiet the hurry in her throbbing head, and bring herself to believe that what had happened were but the events of a few hours ago, instead of weeks or months, as they appeared, and went down to her kind protector. The captain had spread the cloth with great care, and was making some egg sauce in a little saucepan, basting the fowl from time to time during the process with a strong interest, as it turned and browned on a string before the fire. Having propped Florence up with cushions on the sofa, which was already wheeled into a warm corner for her greater comfort, the captain pursued his cooking with extraordinary skill, making hot gravy in a second little saucepan, boiling a handful of potatoes in a third, never forgetting the egg sauce in the first, and making an impartial round of basting and stirring with the most useful of spoons every minute. Besides these cares, the captain had to keep his eye on a diminutive frying pan, in which some sausages were hissing and bubbling in a most musical manner, and there was never such a radiant cook as the captain looked, in the height and heat of these functions. It being impossible to say whether his face or his glazed hat shone the brighter. The dinner being at length quite ready, Captain Cuttle dished and served it up with no less dexterity than he had cooked it. He then dressed for dinner by taking off his glazed hat and putting on his coat. That done, he wheeled the table close against Florence on the sofa, said grace, unscrewed his hook, screwed his fork into its place, and did the honors of the table, my lady lass, apostrophe said the captain, cheer up, and try to eat a deal. Stand by, my dearie. Liver wing it is. Sarse it is. Sausage it is. And potato. ... all which the captain ranged symmetrically on a plate, and pouring hot gravy on the whole with a useful spoon, set before his cherished guest. The whole row o' dead lights is up, forward, lady lass, ... observed the captain, encouragingly, and everything is made snug. Try and pick a bit, my pretty. If Waller was here, ... ah! If I had him for my brother now. ... cried Florence. Don't take on, my pretty. ... said the captain, awast, to oblige me. He was your natural born friend like, weren't he, pet? ... Florence had no words to answer with. She only said, oh, dear, dear Paul, oh, Walter. ... the worry planks she walked on, ... murmured the captain, looking at her drooping face, was as high esteemed by Waller as the water brooks is by the heart which never rejoices. I see him now, the worry day as he was rated on them Dombey books, a speaking of her with his face a glistening with dew leastways with his modest sentiments like a new blowed rose, at dinner. Well, well. If our poor Waller was here, my lady lass, or if he could be, for he's drowned, ain't he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Florence shook her head. Yes, yes, drowned, apostrophe, said the captain, soothingly. As I was saying, if he could be here, he'd beg and pray of you, my precious, to pick a little bit, with a lookout for your own sweet health. Whereby, hold your own, my lady lass, as if it was for Waller's sake, and lay your pretty head to the wind. Apostrophe, Florence essayed to eat a morsel, for the captain's pleasure. The captain, meanwhile, who seemed to have quite forgotten his own dinner, laid down his knife and fork, and drew his chair to the sofa. Waller was a trim lad, weren't he, precious? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the captain, after sitting for some time silently rubbing his chin, with his eyes fixed upon her, and a brave lad, and a good lad? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Florence tearfully assented. And he's drowned, beauty, ain't he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the captain, in a soothing voice. Florence could not but assent again. He was older than you, my lady lass, apostrophe, pursued the captain, but you was like two children together, at first, wham' you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Florence answered yes. Apostrophe, and Waller's drowned, apostrophe, said the captain. Ain't he? Apostrophe, the repetition of this inquiry was a curious source of consolation, but it seemed to be one to Captain Cuttle, for he came back to it again and again. Florence, fain to push from her untasted dinner, and to lie back on her sofa, gave him her hand, feeling that she had disappointed him, though truly wishing to have pleased him after all his trouble, but he held it in his own, which shook as he held it, and appearing to have quite forgotten all about the dinner and her want of appetite, went on growling at intervals, in a ruminating tone of sympathy, poor Waller. Eh, eh. Drowned. Ain't he? Apostrophe, and always waited for her answer, in which the great point of these singular reflections appeared to consist. The fowl and sausages were cold, and the gravy and the egg sauce stagnant, before the captain remembered that they were on the board, and fell to with the assistance of Diogenes, whose united efforts quickly dispatched the banquet. The captain's delight and wonder at the quiet housewifery of Florence in assisting to clear the table, arrange the parlor, and sweep up the hearth, only to be equaled by the fervency of his protest, when she began to assist him, were gradually raised to that degree, that at last he could not choose, but do nothing himself, and stand looking at her, as if she were some fairy, daintily performing these offices for him. The red rim on his forehead glowing again, in his unspeakable admiration. But when Florence, taking down his pipe from the mantel shelf, gave it into his hand, and entreated him to smoke it, the good captain was so bewildered by her attention, that he held it, as if he had never held a pipe, in all his life. Likewise, when Florence, looking into the little cupboard, took out the case bottle, and mixed a perfect glass of grog for him, unasked, and set it at his elbow, his ruddy nose turned pale, he felt himself so graced and honored. When he had filled his pipe in an absolute reverie of satisfaction, Florence lighted it for him, the captain having no power to object, or to prevent her, and resuming her place on the old sofa, looked at him with a smile, so loving and so grateful, a smile that showed him so plainly, how her forlorn heart turned to him, as her face did, through grief, that the smoke of the pipe got into the captain's throat, and made him cough, and got into the captain's eyes, and made them blink and water. The manner in which the captain tried to make believe that the cause of these effects lay hidden in the pipe itself, and the way in which he looked into the bowl for it, and not finding it there, pretended to blow it out of the stem, was wonderfully pleasant. The pipe soon getting into better condition, he fell into that state of repose becoming a good smoker, but sat with his eyes fixed on Florence, and, with a beaming placidity not to be described, and stopping every now and then to discharge a little cloud from his lips, slowly puffed it forth, as if it were a scroll coming out of his mouth, bearing the legend Poor Waller, A. Drowned, ain't he? Apostrophe after which he would resume his smoking with infinite gentleness. Unlike as they were externally, and there could scarcely be a more decided contrast than between Florence in her delicate youth and beauty, and Captain Cuttle with his knobby face, his great broad weather-beaten person, and his gruff voice in simple innocence of the world's ways, and the world's perplexities and dangers, they were nearly on a level. No child could have surpassed Captain Cuttle in an experience of everything but wind and weather, in simplicity, credulity, and generous trustfulness. Faith, hope, and charity shared his whole nature among them. An odd sort of romance, perfectly unimaginative, yet perfectly unreal, and subject to no considerations of worldly prudence or practicability, was the only partner they had in his character. As the captain sat, and smoked, and looked at Florence, God knows what impossible pictures, in which he was the principal figure, presented themselves to his mind. Equally vague and uncertain, though not so sanguine, were her own thoughts of the life before her, and even as her tears made prismatic colors in the light she gazed at, so, through her new and heavy grief, she already saw a rainbow faintly shining in the far-off sky. A wandering princess and a good monster in a storybook might have sat by the fireside, and talked as Captain Cuttle and poor Florence talked, and not have looked very much unlike them. The captain was not troubled with the faintest idea of any difficulty in retaining Florence, or of any responsibility thereby incurred. Having put up the shutters, and locked the door, he was quite satisfied on this head. If she had been a ward in Chancery, it would have made no difference at all to Captain Cuttle. He was the last man in the world to be troubled by any such considerations. So the captain smoked his pipe very comfortably, and Florence and he meditated after their own manner. When the pipe was out, they had some tea, and then Florence entreated him to take her to some neighboring shop, where she could buy the few necessaries she immediately wanted. It being quite dark, the captain consented. Peeping carefully out first, as he had been wont to do in his time of hiding from Mrs. McStinger, and arming himself with his large stick, in case of an appeal to arms, being rendered necessary by any unforeseen circumstance. The pride Captain Cuttle had, in giving his arm to Florence, and escorting her some 200 or 300 yards, keeping a bright lookout all the time, and attracting the attention of everyone who passed them, by his great vigilance and numerous precautions, was extreme. Arrived at the shop, the captain felt it a point of delicacy to retire during the making of the purchases, as they were to consist of wearing apparel, but he previously deposited his tin canister on the counter, and informing the young lady of the establishment that it contained £14.2, requested her, in case that amount of property should not be sufficient to defray the expenses of his niece's little outfit at the word niece, apostrophe he bestowed a most significant look on Florence, accompanied with pantomime, expressive of sagacity and mystery, to have the goodness to sing out, apostrophe and he would make up the difference from his pocket. Casually consulting his big watch, as a deep means of dazzling the establishment, and impressing it with a sense of property, the captain then kissed his hook to his niece, and retired outside the window, where it was a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.